the industry, especially a lot right now, I think it's like focused on like a product rather than an artist, right? Mm. They want to see like, okay, do you have a fan base, right? I hear all the time, oh, we're like, they want to sign a fan base, not like an artist.
Oh, that's interesting.
But also at the end of the day, it's like labels, what do they know? You know what I mean? Like,
welcome to the Cloud Machine Podcast, your all-access pass to the music industry. I'm your host, Matt Landry, and every week we immerse you in the music world, uncovering industry insights, offering expert guidance, and exploring the stories that influence the industry. Cloud Machine Podcast is brought to you by Aites, the innovative creative agency behind some of your favorite live concerts and tours. Want to take your music to the next level? Join our vibrant community on the Aites Network Discord. And with that, let's get started with today's episode.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Cloud Machine Podcast. Today's discussion on songwriting and musical artistry is crucial for anyone that's looking to navigate and excel in the music industry. It's not just for songwriters and recording artists, but also for producers, collaborators, and anyone who values the art of music creation and performance. Joining us to share her expertise is Earth to Emily, an up-and-coming pop artist and songwriter who seamlessly blends modern club sonics with classic pop and R&B influences. Emily has top lining and vocal production credits with artists like Elio, Baby Girl, amongst, you know, many others. And she recently won a Canadian Screen Award for her musical contributions to the CBC/HBO show Sort Of. Her music and her dedication to pushing sonic boundaries and collaborating with other creatives makes her a truly unique voice in the industry of today. We're thrilled to have her here today to discuss her journey, creative process, and her upcoming EP, Socialite Radio, which is out July 5th, which is this Friday, folks. Hi, Emily. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I am fantastic. Happy Pride, everybody. It's still, while we're recording this, I know I just said this Friday, but this is coming out July 2nd, but today we're still in June. So happy Pride.
Last day of the best month of the year.
That's correct. We just played yesterday at Pride Toronto.
We did.
How was that for you? Let's start there.
Oh, so good. So fun. I mean, the rain, I was like really scared that it was going to start pouring, but it was good. The sun came out. It was like such a short set, 15 minutes.
Yes.
But it was really fun. It was like my first time playing with in years. And I mean, I haven't been playing for a couple years now, like, you know, a couple shows here and there, but getting back into it has felt really good in like this different reimagined way. So it was really nice. How did you feel?
Oh, I felt great. Yes. Yeah. I mean, as you said, I mean, it's like 15 minutes is crazy fast. Especially five songs, you know, every song is like 2.5 minutes for vibe. So it's very like quick pace, but I think it's great. And I think the people, loved it. So
yeah, it was really fun.
Wanted to start the podcast by asking you about your favorite live show experience as a fan.
Right. My favorite live show. Well, I would have to say there's been so many, but I really like this band called Third Story, which are like, they're not together anymore, unfortunately, but they are three male singers and they sing in like three-part harmony. And now they're all doing their own little thing. But I saw them in New York, like, probably 5 years ago. I don't remember how long ago, but years and years and years ago. It was before Yebba was Yebba. She was going by Abby Smith.
Yeah.
And I like followed her on Instagram and stuff. And she was at the show. She like attended it. And I remember seeing her and being like, oh, that's Abby Smith. That's so cool. And yeah, it was like insane. Also, I feel like in New York, I think I was just romanticizing that even more. So the energy there is just like palpable. And it was just great. It's great to see like musicians play. I feel like that's a really nice, it's a luxury to see that, you know, people like so skilled at their craft and just like watching it. And, you know, it's really cool. So probably that.
Fantastic. And sorry, those are three singers and a band as well?
No, it was just those three, and then one of them played guitar, basically.
Fantastic. And yeah,
Yeah.
I mean, Yeba, gotta say, like,
Love,
love
yeah,
Yeba.
ball.
Yeah.
No, literally voice of our generation. Like, she's insane. Her story's really interesting because I think a lot of it was like she really was like, I'm going, she set out to be a, such a incredible like vocalist, and she did so many like agility practice. I just remember reading something, and I think it was to do with religion. Like, I think she like sings for God. Like, I think that is like her purpose, if I'm
Okay.
remembering correctly. But it's just so cool, I find, with musicians when they're actually like, oh no, I wasn't born this way. Like, I'm gonna work at it and like be the best if I want to be the best. And I think that's so cool.
It's so great. And for those who don't know Yeba, because I still think she's still, sort of
Yes.
in not to say in the trenches, but
Underground a little bit. It's
underground.
like if you
Underground.
know, you know.
Yeah.
She's also
Yes.
like, she goes on tours and she like opens for people and she does like background featuring stuff. So it's like, I don't think she's even gone on her own tour. I could be wrong, but
Yeah.
I always see her like with Robert Glasper. I think she opened for like John Mayer, I want to say. I don't
Yes.
know.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. But
Yeah.
the Yeba Electric Ladyland studio sessions on YouTube for those who are, interested, you gotta check those out. But yeah, all the Robert Glasper Yeba stuff is insane as well.
And you know why her name is Yaba?
Yes, because it's Abby backwards, I
Yeah, but I feel like people don't know that.
believe. Okay.
And so I love to preach the
Yeah,
gospel of that.
I'm sorry I spoiled it.
No,
I
it
really
was
tried.
good. You should have
Okay.
pretended and been like,
Do you
yeah.
want
Yeah.
to
No. The
it
bit is gone, man.
again? No. Okay. For those of our listeners who don't know Earth to Emily, what is the project slash era that you've worked on slash, maybe it's a song that you co-songwrited with or something like that. Maybe it's your upcoming project. I want to ask you about a project that would represent your work the most.
I feel like it's this upcoming one. I think
Yeah.
that's probably most, I would say, majority's like artists' answer, just because you get so tired with the stuff that you put out in the past because it's like it took so long, and by the time you're putting it out, you're already like on to the next era, la la.
Yeah.
But I feel like this upcoming project, like there's this. The songs that were, I've never turned out music as fast as this project. And it's just because of
Oh.
like my resources and team growing,
Yeah.
like a direct impact from that. And so that's been really exciting for me because I don't have to like sit on a song for like 2+ years. And I feel like I'm be getting better at like just, you grow older, you get better at like articulating what you want and knowing what is cool and that kind of like evolving over time.
Yeah.
But probably, yeah, this upcoming project for sure. My song, I feel like Shiny Silver Bullet is like, I always say it's my mission statement for like this upcoming EP.
Yeah.
So yeah.
That's great. And when you say 2 years, that's a long time. Talk about artist
Yeah.
fatigue as well in regards to referencing your own material and sort of being maybe not sick of it, but at least past it, emotionally art, from an artist perspective, past it after 2 years' time, what has given you the time now to put out some music like quicker than that, sort of in your process?
I think a lot of it has been, I mean, really like resources. So like funding,
Yeah.
I think, is the biggest one.
Mm-hmm.
I think when you're writing the songs and then you have to pay the producer fees out of pocket and then the cover art, if you don't have a friend who can do it for you got to,
Sure.
pay someone to do that, and then you got to, or maybe you got to do a shoot for the cover. You got to get a mix and then it
Right.
mastered. And it's like, so much money, and it sucks that that like deters people from putting things out. And I was scared making my next project because, you know, you keep leveling up and working with, you know, different people at different levels. And I remember talking to my manager and being like, I don't even want to go into that session because I won't be able to afford it. And I know I'm going to make something I like. And it's just like
crazy. Yeah.
Yeah. So it was definitely demotivating at one point. And then, yeah, just like getting funding as a Canadian, like SoCan can advance you like your publishing royalties, depending on how much you make. And so I was lucky about that. And but yeah, but being independent, it's tough because you're like, well, how am I going to pay these people? So that's the biggest thing. And then also I think just making stuff that I actually like, and it's happening more consistently because of like, I'm now, you know, a lot of the time I'm in LA. And so I'm working with people that have come there to also, you know, evolve sonically. And so it's been nice. It's just like a bigger pool there with different types of fish, and you're like, cool.
Yeah.
And you can find your fish more, you know?
Mm-hmm. That's fantastic. Yeah. On the podcast, we do a quote segment, Madame.
I saw that.
Last year, for those listening, it was Erykah Badu quote comparing music and the music business and how they're the same and how they're different and different perspectives on that and stuff. This year is a Joni Mitchell quote that we're analyzing.
This year?
Yeah.
You do it yearly. Oh, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
We've been doing a yearly thing. But
I thought you meant to say last week, and then you said last year, and I was like.
No, it's a yearly thing. So just wanting to get different perspectives on a similar quote.
High stakes. High stakes for the quote. Period.
Exactly. I'm putting a lot of pressure on Joni Mitchell here. So Joni, in 2004, this is 20 years ago, she says, I heard someone from the music business saying that they are no longer looking for talent. They want people with a certain look and a willingness to cooperate. Now, again, she says that she heard someone from the music business saying this, that she doesn't necessarily agree with it, but she heard someone from the music business saying that they are no longer looking for talent. They want people with a certain look and a willingness to cooperate. Just want to get your first instincts on that quote.
I feel like, I mean, the industry is constantly changing. Yeah. I think that, you know, the industry, especially a lot right now, I think it's like focused on like a product rather than an artist, right? Mm. They want to see like, okay, do you have a fan base, right? I hear all the time, oh, we're like, they want to sign a fan base, not like an artist.
Oh, that's interesting.
But also at the end of the day, it's like, labels, what do they know? You know what I mean? Like, it's like, yeah, that is an industry. Like, they're trying to monetize it. And it sucks that you have to play the game and like the politics of it. But, you know, someone there is going to have opinions. And yeah, I mean, it's interesting. It's an interesting quote. I don't know. I think it kind of depends on, I mean, there's like good A&Rs and there's people fighting for artists, and then there's other people who maybe are a little bit more jaded and kind of are more focused on signing like products versus like artistry kind of thing.
Yeah. I think what you said about that there's a lot of labels or a lot of like, you know, industry representatives that want to sign the fan base and not necessarily the artist. I think that's really interesting. It touches on a lot of things that we've been talking about on the podcast over the past like few months in regards to the audience, like having the power now and not necessarily like the labels in regards to like basically pushing what's popular or what's the newest thing in the industry. It's not necessarily like the labels feeding it to the public anymore. It's really the audience deciding who that is. Are there some other things that you've been seeing in the industry that that you hear about or that is in conversation that you think is new in the industry, like you know, the labels not necessarily wanting to sign the artist but more sign the audience?
I feel like I mean, obviously TikTok, I'm sure everyone comes on and talks about it.
Yeah.
But it's a good example because it's something that's kind of like revolutionized the industry a little bit, where, you know, that's going to come up in the first conversation you have in any meeting is like, so like, or they're going to know like what your following is on, you know, across social platforms. And yeah. I mean, it's interesting. I mean, I feel like TikTok is interesting because it's really easy to follow someone on TikTok. And so, you know, even when I am kind of like, okay, well, you need to be posting TikToks. I'm always thinking about, you know, are these genuine listeners? And then beyond that, if I'm going to blow up on a video, like I want to make sure it's for something that I want to have a fan base for, right? Because I think some other creators too have gotten in the like the whole of like, oh, I blew up for this funny video, but like I'm trying to have people now listen to my music and that's not translating.
Yes.
Or like I blew up for this, you know, cover or whatever. Now people just want me to sing this. But there's no one path, no right way to do things. And I think it's just like stay true to yourself and do what you think is cool. And then hopefully like the same kind of mindset people will follow. And yeah.
Has there any been any like shifts that you've seen in the industry lately that has changed how you've been writing or like how you like your creative process? Like let's say from what we've been talking about in regards to like the audience now has the power, you know?
Yeah.
Has that shifted the way you're writing or creating rather?
I mean, the obvious answer being like, you know, cause I'm obviously an artist, but I also obviously write for other artists. So taking sessions with artists who I don't do it so much anymore, but I think when I was really, you know, new to LA, I like, you know, any session I was like, yeah, let's do it. I think, you know, maybe not feeling like super aligned with an artist, but they're have a lot of followers on TikTok. And so you're like, okay, I will write this. And it's, you know, maybe not aligned with your like artistic vision. But it's like, that's the job of a songwriter is like, okay, what do you, you know, trying to help someone's vision come to life. So yeah, like writing those types of songs. And then obviously kind of the other one is, oh, this will do good on TikTok because you can do this transition. And that could be a session for me. That could be a session for someone else. But as soon as you start, I mean, maybe it's like a little, I don't know if it's jaded or what, but as soon as you start talking about how it's going to be marketed in the room before you've even written the song, you just have to be careful about that because I don't think it's wrong or I don't think it's bad. I know sometimes like if I'm writing a song with someone and I can see like the music video, like I'll be like, oh my God, you could do this. Or like if you're doing a live show, like make this part so that like the audience can sing it back.
Yeah.
But I don't think that's bad. I think you just have to be careful that that's not just like running why you're writing. And we're always trying to remember that you're trying to push culture. At least that's kind of my MO is like how to push culture forward, how to make music that is like genre bending and kind of paving a new sonic way for other people, you know?
Yeah. That's fantastic. Yeah. Talking about paving the way and pushing culture and stuff, are you seeing any new developments in the industry that you think is pushing the culture, the people, the artists?
Interesting. Do you mean like artists' music or do you mean just like industry stuff?
I mean, a little bit of both. Maybe what you've been seeing that's been maybe inspiring you lately.
Well, okay, it's so funny because me and Charlotte, Miss Elio, like we like a couple months ago because we were writing her next album and we were talking about how scared we were about pop music because it was like so dry and we were just like, oh no. And that really impacts me. I find when there's no, cause it's like, obviously I'm a writer, but it's like, obviously I'm a listener first. Like you know, how do you develop your sound? You listen to people you want to sound like. Right. And so, but now like since Bratz come out and then like for me, the new Omar Apollo, and then obviously the new Camila Cabello. There's just been so much good pop music in the last like month or whatever.
Yeah.
And that's just like life-changing. And I feel like it all comes back to the artistry. Like that's always what it comes back to, is like, what do you think is cool? I mean, Camila's album's like such a great example, because she came from like Fifth Harmony to doing now such like left pop. And obviously it's like her collaborators as well, right? It's like consistently like Jasper Harris and like Amy Allen, Lily Allen, I forget. Oh no.
Lily Allen. Like the
Lily Allen. Yeah,
like
right.
The artist?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah, Lily Allen.
Yeah, yeah. F you very much. Yeah. Okay, great. And she's writing on Tate's and Tate McRae's new stuff, right? Like
yeah.
I feel like it's like the artist, but also the, you know, streamline of like collaborators and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And it's just so inspiring, because it really is like they obviously are trying to like do left and be artists, and that's super cool. But it also just like opens the door of what is pop music and what can make it on the radio, and that's exciting for an artist like me, you know.
Yeah, because you're also trying to push like, you know, the sonic boundaries as well, just like these yeah. artists, seeing it's almost refreshing to see an artist as big as Charlie being like, you know, fuck whatever's on the radio, let's go to the club, you know.
Yeah, no, for sure.
And that her having arguably one of her biggest records so far, you know.
Isn't that so crazy? It's like such an example of like when you stay true to yourself and just like do what you want to do, yeah. like you will get rewarded for it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You said something interesting about, you know, being how like what's the moment right now in regards to pop music, and how there was a dry spell and stuff, and you're currently mm-hmm. writing the next Elio record with Charlotte. Although that record is probably gonna take a while, you know, maybe a year, maybe whatever. I don't want to, you know. I don't want
to. I'm like zipped.
Yeah,
I'm like,
I actually don't.
NDA.
Yeah, I don't know the timeline either. But how does, you know, does one need to predict what the other people are going to do in the industry? Like, there's no way that Charlie, Omar, you know, Camila Cabello were like, okay, let's all release in May, June, and we're going to change the industry. Like yeah. does one, how... I guess it's just a question of like, in regards to like just sessions in LA, for instance, is it like people know who's coming out with what, and then therefore influences the entire industry? Like, do you see
that? That's a good question. I actually do see that. I think it is very common to be in LA and know what the biggest artists are doing and know what's, you know, sonic category they're going with next.
Right.
And I think we all feel that in, you know, the industry, and yeah, just like even Sabrina Carpenter releasing like that country song after that, like really like Doja Cat pop song. And I feel like that gets, you know, it's all a cycle, like it all gets kind of reused. But yeah, it is pretty common, and for sure, like if I'm in a room doing a song for myself or a pitch day or whatever, I'm like maybe gonna lean more into the genre that I know is having a moment.
But not necessarily the moment that's being released right now, but a moment in other songs.
A future moment.
Kind of thing.
I mean, I think as artists, like you write something and then you put it out and then you're already on to the next, right?
Right.
And so I think I don't know, I always find this fascinating when it comes to like someone's sonic palette, because everyone, like no one has heard the same songs before in their whole lifespan, right? Like, you know, our parents played us different musics growing up, and you know, we went to school for different things and whatever. And I find that with, you know, for example, Brat, like that sonically would influence me, but I wouldn't make something just like that album, but that's gonna have influence in like the future. So it's kind of, it's containing multitudes, and I love that, and I think that's so cute, you
mm-hmm.
know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I want to ask something. I mean, I've never really asked some of this stuff, but
we're going off book today.
we are a little bit. When I'm thinking about, artists that are like defining the pop music industry, rather, it's oftentimes like thought about as cycles. Like, for instance, Brat. Well, while you mention it, Charlie's last record, Crash, was in 2022. There was a time span there where she wasn't necessarily doing much. We would talk about artists that have cycles and stuff, but songwriters don't necessarily have cycles. That's what I think, but we could talk about that. But I wanted to ask you about, are there like songwriters that push the industry? Like, are there certain camps that are like, okay, we know that these people, let's say like maybe like a Max Martin or something, for instance, maybe he's a little bit out now, but are there people that often you go to the songs that are like pushing the boundaries or on top of the charts, and
definitely
are like, okay, that songwriter is doing that, and they're really they're always really on the next thing.
Definitely. I mean, like Jasper Harris is a great one. Like, he did the whole Camilla album, and then he did like Tate's The X's, and what was the other one that was like huge? X's and is this the other one? They're a sister pair. X's, like, he did Tate's stuff. I don't have Spotify. I have Apple Music and I need to get on Spotify because of the credits. But like Steph Jones is another one. She's doing like a lot of the Sabrina Carpenter stuff, her last album, and then these new singles, I'm pretty sure. And yes, absolutely. Like Tobias Gesso Jr. is another one.
Yes.
He did the Adele. Now he's doing Dua Lipa. Like, so 100% there are. And with songwriters in LA, it's like you grind until it's kind of beautiful. I mean, songwriting is like a lot to do with like friendship and collaboration and how you are in a room. And if people like you, they want to include you. And if it's aligned, if it's meant to be, it'll be. And I think that's really cool. So definitely.
Yeah. You mentioned something that we talk about all the time on the podcast in regards to being a good hang. It's totally. Very important. We often talk about it in regards to like the live industry, because that's where eight sort of lives a little bit more. Can you speak to the importance of being a good hang in a songwriting room or a songwriting?
Totally.
Like and how is that different than maybe what you've seen in the live space or even at Humber?
That's crazy.
We don't need to talk about it.
I did not go there. No. It's so interesting. I mean, there are people in rooms that are truly just the mood dudes. You know what I mean? Like they are just there to vibe. Personally, I'm like a mood dude, but also genius. No, I'm joking.
By mood dude, what do you mean by that?
Like, they're maybe just hanging. Like, there's a really good analogy that I always like to think about in a songwriter room. It's like a delivery room for a baby, basically. So it's really helpful. So basically, you can either be the mother giving birth, you can be the baby, the idea. You can be the dad in the corner who's like throwing up because of blood or something. You can be the doctor like assisting the baby. You could be like a nurse, a supporting, you know what I mean? Like, these are all things that you could be in a room. And I find it really helpful because
that's really interesting. Yeah.
You know, like, especially if you have a day where you are in a bigger room and you're writing and maybe you didn't contribute that much, but maybe because that's what you were supposed to do. Like, you don't always have to have the ideas. You don't always have to be speaking all the time, which I have an issue with. Chatterbox. But like, that is kind of my vibe. You know what I mean? So there's different people and
that's really
used differently. And especially, when you're in a room and maybe you don't talk that much that day or you don't have an idea, but like you're just a wall for someone to bounce ideas off of or to say yes or no. Like, it's all equal. You know what I mean?
And not everybody has to be the baby.
Not everyone has to be the baby. Not everyone has to be the mother. You can just be like the best friend in kind of the waiting room, but like
still in the waiting room.
No. Yeah. So some people are just mad chillers, and yeah, especially in bigger rooms, like you physically cannot sometimes talk because someone else is. So you just have to like create a good energy. And I think with songwriting specifically, it really is yes and, like, it is improvisation. Yeah. It is theater work. Like, you are saying yes and it's and if it's a no, you better have a better idea. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
At least that's kind of what I've learned, is, you know, you don't want to stop the momentum. Mm. And then when I think with live stuff, I mean, just professionalism is like key. And I think that there's more nuance in songwriting rooms, because like, you can like party and then write a song, and it's like there's more of like this kind of nuance of like where you are and how you're feeling and whatever. But with live stuff, it's just such a professionalism thing. I think I would rather have someone who's like less talented but is more professional and nicer than someone who's just like super talented but like shows up late, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Very different. Where it's like, you know, like you said, you could wake up from like a big hangover.
Yeah.
Still write a song that's probably more in that vibe anyway.
Yeah.
If exactly. that's what you want. If you want the
exactly.
post club hangover song, you know, you might be writing Brat 2, you know, it's like
Exactly.
like talk about the night before, you know, saying
yes.
Like, but if you get to the stage and you're like that, you might not play the right chords or whatever.
Absolutely.
Totally. We talk a little bit about, you know, LA, Toronto. I want to talk about you going being back and forth a little bit over you the last few years, and how you view the balance between the two cities, and how that dual city living has been influencing your writing and your just your project.
Cool.
cool.
You're riding. Yeah. Yes, I mean, I think the thing with LA is, I think it's all about what you want. Like, that always what it comes down to, because you can be in Toronto and get in rooms and do your thing here. And if you're satisfied with the kind of, you know, camps that you're in and the kind of levels that you're in and whatever, perfect. Like, you know what I mean? You're set. Because I think it's just like, I grew up downtown Toronto ever since I was a kid. So I've just done the internships. I've done the school. I've done the mentoring at studios. I've done the writing. And so for me, it was just a different experience where I was like, oh, I want to, you know, do more and more and more. I want to meet more people, especially in the pop industry. Right.
Yeah.
So for me, LA, that's just where the industry is. I wish it was in New York, because I love New York, but it was kind of that sacrifice of like, okay, I have to do LA. That's where everyone's going. That's where everyone is. And I now like couldn't be happier. Like, I love it so much there. I think I've just leaned in, and it took a long time, you know, took a couple years of going back and forth to get my groove, to understand where to rent my car and like where I'm going to stay and who I'm going to hang out with the first night I get there and what I need in my routine to like succeed in my sessions while I'm there and not get burnt out or whatever. And that all just takes time and knowing yourself. And
yeah, there's something about, you know, people, and we hear it all the time, you know, moving to, for a long time it was New York, there's a little bit of Nashville going on, it feels like Nashville's always been around, kind of thing, but a lot of immigration to LA lately. I want a big word here, but sociodemographically, why is LA the place? Why do you think LA is the place? And is it just more than just because there's a lot more people? Like, you know, I think that's what people tend to think about in regards to, oh, they're moving to LA just because there's more sessions. But is it more than that? And what's like, why is there such a shine in LA, you think?
Well, for me, when I was like young, like a teenager, and thinking about where I wanted to go and whatever. And I took my first trip to LA, like right before the pandemic. But really, I mean, I was always told, because I was going to New York all the time, because one of my best friends from high school went to NYU. So I was going there as much as I could.
Yeah.
And, you know, working with producers there when I was like a teenager, literally like 18, 19, and, you know, meeting A&Rs and just trying to meet people. And They say that the industry switches over every 10 years. So like New York, LA, like coast wise, but I feel like it's been 10 years and it's still in LA. And I think LA is special. I think there's just a type of energy there that, like, obviously this is all like such, you know, privilege, but the weather being so nice and like there's so much space. And being an East Coast girl my whole life and being like, I love the city. I'm such a hustler. Like,
yeah,
I want to walk 20,000 steps a day and like just like hustle, hustle, hustle. It's the same there, but it's like this relaxation of like, oh no, like when you go, this is such a random example, but it's like, no, when you go surfing with that artist and then you like go get coffee and you hang out and like da 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 da. That actually is a part of the work. And I think that that's kind of beautiful and is such a privilege. But having space, hiking is big there, and like prioritizing your health, where I feel like on the East Coast, it's very much like who can work the hardest and not and need any sleep and live in a small apartment. And like, that's really cool. And that's obviously still where my heart lies, I think. But
yeah, yeah.
yeah, I feel like weather, and also it's just like such a cool thing that's happening. And I feel lucky to be in it so often, is like just a lot of the artists are going there. Like, I think before, you know, you go to New York, right? Electric Lady Studios is there. Like, there's so many cool historical things there. And now I feel like everyone's in LA. So like even UK artists that I like are going to be in LA taking sessions. And it's just like this really cool thing where I'm going to a show and I'm going to see like 10 artists that I want to work with. And then it's like this different type of networking that feels more like friendship. You know what I mean?
Yeah. 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 Natural. Like it's like, oh, you see this person, you introduce yourself.
Yes.
And that's how it happens naturally. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. That's how I've like name drop a like gotten dinner with like Zara Larsson and like, you know what I mean? Befriend people who I would never cross paths with just because of where we're at. And I think that like Toronto is really cool and like you can have a lot of great opportunities here. It's just going to be different sizes and different types, you know?
Yeah. It's hard to stumble upon opportunities almost, you know?
Yeah. And it's just like so not comparable. I think everyone's favorite question is like New York or LA. And it's just like so different. You know what I mean? So it really comes back to what do you want, you know? Cause this me being like, oh, going out and like meeting your favorite artists and then befriending them sounds so fun to me, but that can be like not interesting to someone else. And like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Would you ever be excited if the industry moved back to New York? It's a weird question.
Nope, probably not. I feel like I've gotten my community there so hard that, and also just like my quality of life is different. So yeah, probably not. I mean, I think I could get behind it. I want to obviously like maybe own an apartment in New York. That would be like a dream one day. But I think, I don't know if I'd want to work in New York, you know?
Yeah. 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 Can you take us to the studio in regards to, in regards to, just like maybe just a typical songwriting process for those who've never necessarily experienced it, and how you approach creating a new song. And you know, I know I'll spoil it for the people listening, but it's rare that there's you know, there's not really a streamlined process, and everybody's different. But typically for you, sort of, what does that look like?
Yeah, I mean, I think that there is no right way to write a song, obviously.
Yeah.
But there are so many tools that like our room should kind of go, and there's ways to, when you are stuck, how to get yourself out of that and stuff like that. So
yeah,
there definitely isn't rules, but they're like, for me at least, and what I find success in, like there is, you know? So it really depends. So are we talking, I'm probably going to be writing for someone else in this case, right?
Well, that was my next question after that. How it differs from, sorry.
Got it.
From yourself, writing for yourself versus writing for others. So maybe we start
right
for others.
Okay, cool. Yeah. I mean, I think it's, do you know the person beforehand? You know what I mean? You want to make sure that you're like, if you're going in the room with maybe like a bigger artist or someone you've never met, it's different than someone like you've obviously written with before and you kind of know each other's styles. But let's say you don't know them and they're an artist that you like and you've heard of and you get in a room with them and you're like, yay. I feel like for me, it's like the girl guide motto of my life, but like preparation is success. Like really anything you do, you prepare for and you're going to do great and you're not going to really stress about it. Right. So for me, that looks like song ideas, concepts, titles. Obviously you can get in the room with someone and they're like, okay, so this is what I want to write. Like some people have really strong visions and that's great. And they're like, I'm writing this type of song today. I need a slow song for my EP. I want, you know, it to be about this. I'm going through a breakup or I'm going through this or like I'm moving. And then it's just like a conversation. And I think that a lot of beauty can come from literally just talking. I think that it's like a funny thing at the start of a session. You sometimes talk for like 2 hours.
Right.
And you feel like you're like literally wasting time, but then someone's going to say something and you're like, bingo, like, let's just use that sentence actually for that first lyric.
Right.
And then, you know, that would have never came from just like being hyper-focused on trying to write something. So yeah. And then concepts. And then there's like melody. I feel like tricks, I think for me, because I did, you know, was lucky enough to go to jazz school in Toronto. I feel like that education has really helped me understand music in a way that I feel like lucky and like privileged, because in rooms I can like articulate it probably a lot better than someone who hasn't, right? And I think that goes with melodies too, is like I'm gonna know where I'm gonna know where the chords are and I'm gonna know what notes are gonna make or gonna sound better and make people feel certain things, and then I can test out everything, or like what type of scale could go over a certain chord that's going to be interesting and different, but still work. And I think that that really helps me specifically as like branding myself as like, oh, I'm also, I can like speak music, you know what I mean? Right. And you don't have to, but I think for me, that really helps kind of help people just get there and like hear different notes that maybe other people don't.
Are there tools that are commonly used in some of these sessions? Like just even like things that like that maybe listeners can go check out, you know, some things like that.
I think it really is about experiencing it and seeing what works for you. I think it's like the toolbox of take what you want from all the different resources in the whole world and then kind of add them to your toolbox and whatever works for you. But I mean, I heard this quote, I think it was Ricky Reed who said it, where it's like, you write a great song. If you want to write a great song, just walk through a door. And I find that interesting because I feel like in so many rooms we're writing and we're like low key, like banging our heads against the wall being like, oh, what should we do? And it's not a bad thing. It's just like something that happens. And then you're like, let's take a break. Let's walk. Let's get up. Let's be physical. That helps me a lot. Just kind of like get out of my head and be less like hyper-focused.
Yeah.
And then just melody tricks. Like, you know, if you sing a low verse, maybe you're singing a high chorus or the vice versa, you know, octaves, what types of, like Remy Wolf does that cool thing in that one song where she like jumps octaves. And I love that. And I always use that. I'm like, what would octave jumping sound like in the same melody, you know?
Right.
And you know, versus like, I'm going to sing static melodies, maybe those kind of things. But I think it all depends on what you like too, because maybe you're going to hate a static melody and then you just got to keep looking, you know?
Totally. How does your process differ from, you know, it's, let's say collaborating with people or just being in a room like by yourself kind of thing? Is it very much just like a process of just trying things until you like it? Do you send things to other people? Like, is it like, hey, check this out, what do you think? Or do you wait a while? What are some of the, what differs from that process of writing for others versus yourself?
I think it's just being able to call the shots versus helping someone get there. Like, I always think the artist is law in the room. So if even if I'm, you know, writing with Charlotte and I think something's really good and she's like, not feeling it, moved on. I've already moved on. I'm into the next idea. You know what I mean?
Right, right.
But for me, because I feel like I do have a really good sense of what I like and what I don't like. And if I don't that day, I'm going to be with people that I trust their opinions on. So they're like, let's do that. And I'm like, okay, that's fine. You know?
Yeah.
So it really is just being able to really like 100% have your vision come alive. And yeah, that's really it. I think I'm like, what was the question? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, just talking about your process now and
yeah.
You know, I want to ask you about the Socialite Rodeo EP.
Rodeo.
Yeah. Yes.
I think you said radio earlier, but I let it slide because it was your French accent, I think.
No, I definitely said Socialite Rodeo.
Play the tape back. Play the tape back. Yeah. We will be.
We'll edit it.
Yeah. Rodeo.
Just because I just wanted to ask about this EP because it seems like, you know, a lot of new sounds from maybe some of the people that, you know, have been following you for a long time, like myself, gotta say, day one.
Ban alert, get him out of here.
Get him out of here. can you talk about like your creative process and that and just sort of like discovering maybe, you know, some more, maybe just evolving, you know, your sounds and your artistry and that process. Like what was that like?
Totally. I feel like so hard to not like just having a mirror in the, don't you just want to look at yourself the whole time?
Oh, you think that I'm not doing that?
I'm just like the whole time thinking that. But whatever. Okay, well, yeah, I mean, I feel like at this point, the reason I'm also like so excited and proud of this EP is because it feels like the music I've always wanted to make and like the music that I listen to feels like more sonically in this direction.
Yeah.
Which is really exciting. I mean, you know, I put out like Baby Teeth and Sunday and all those songs when I was literally a baby. And I think that that's cool. And I'm really proud to have my progression online. But
yeah.
I think for me, it always comes back to, do I think this is cool? You know what I mean?
Sure.
And I think that everyone has their own taste, and taste is a skill that you know, can get rusty about and you can get better at. And it's about kind of intaking the media that you want to be intaking and listening to songs that you find interesting. And, you know, I love finding new music. And some people just want to listen to the same old albums. Personally, I cannot do that. But, you know, like, I really like doing that, for example. So that's going to be what excites me. And so for me, you know, the middle of my kind of chart is like pushing the sonic palette into something new.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I've been vibing with obviously Dijon and Mickey, they're like the best artists ever. And so it's been kind of the first time where I'm like, okay, I want to be like super shiny sounding, but also have like organic elements kind of come in.
Yeah.
And there's this kind of the first time where I feel like I'm working with producers who like understand, you know, auto-tune as an instrument rather than just something you add on to make your pitch better. So yeah, just like meeting more like-minded people and more people that I feel safe to be like, how about this? And people who are going to champion that. So definitely super lucky. And yeah, I mean, after this, I'm maybe, I don't know. Album is obviously a dream. So I'm just going to keep writing and see.
Okay. The premiere information.
Yeah, you heard it here first.
Yeah, you heard it here first. There's something interesting that you said there. I just wanted to touch on that a bit. You said something about like, saying that you've always sort of loved this type of music, but it's like it's only now that you've sort of allowed yourself maybe to explore that path. And
he caught me in a lie, folks. He caught me in a lie.
Not necessarily. I just want to ask about how okay. You know, Dijon and McGee specifically, like I want to ask how like the media around us and like the artists that we listen to like allow us to also go down those paths that maybe before you were like, oh, there's no room for what I actually want to do, you know? Like
totally.
Maybe it's a question about how the artists that you listen to or other songwriters listen to, how it affects like your current songwriting process. Like how have you found that? And I'm just seeing that reflected in this, the, you know, maybe some of your favorite artists. Yes, it's coming out in your songwriting process right now.
Totally. I mean, it is a good point because you're kind of like, well, so how can you've always wanted to make this if this feels like new, right? And I think for me, it's more, I guess, of like a state of mind in the sense of I want to be an amalgamation. Is that the right word?
Yeah, sure.
Of a socio and demographically amalgamation of he said this is a real nice word, folks. Nice. But I want to be an amalgamation of all my favorite artists. And I think that like that was true when I was making like Baby Teeth Era. But yeah, I don't think I quite hit the nail on the head. And also I think my taste has just gotten better as I get older. And I think that's kind of true for everyone. And yeah, I think it's been a really common thing where we all heard the Miggy album. We were like, I want to be standing, playing guitar and making that kind of music. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Everyone's like, cool, I'm playing guitar now. But which is really cool that one artist can kind of change, you know, a lot of musicians kind of POV on the instrument. And because I low-key like hated guitars in my songs, I was like, nope. And then as soon as I got into that, I was like, okay. But yeah, I think that you know, your music is gonna, without even trying, just sound closer to the people that you listen to, because that's just kind of how it works, you know? If you think about it for like 1 second, you're like, what would this artist do? And that's a good kind of tool too, to be like, what would Dijon sing right now?
Yes.
And then you sing that. Like Shiny Silver Bullet was really tied to Dijon. I was like, I want to make
interesting
many times that song off his last album.
Yeah.
But remake it as I would. That was literally it. And that's kind of how I came about all those melodies with my friends Nick and Michael.
There you go. Yeah, I mean, it's the age old, ye old tale about, you know, how like everything's like sort of everything's been done before, and everything is like just like an amalgamation of like everything, you know. And like we are the combination of our favorite artists, and that's what makes our taste, you know.
Like, hey,
I think that's interesting.
Is there an echo in the room?
Hey, okay. Yo, you mentioned Nick and Michael. Can you share a memorable experience of collaboration and one moment that was like, oh my gosh, like this really worked? Or do you remember like a moment or a day?
Sorry.
In,
I'm thinking about a funny story. Yeah.
In the studio was like, oh my gosh, this unlocked like this whole other thing, you know? You also totally said like Shiny is like your mission statement for this thing. Do you remember like discovering Shiny and being like, oh my gosh, like, this is the new direction, you know?
Totally. When you first started talking about a memory, I thought about the time that Nick was singing at my show and then fell off the stage at Longbow Hall. I don't even remember that. But anyways, that was definitely a moment I'll remember. And then the fans just kind of pushed him back on stage. He didn't quite fall all the way. Anyways, so the next memory I have is, yeah, Shiny. When we were writing that session was actually interesting because it took like 3 or 4 sessions to actually complete the whole song. So we wrote the first verse and the first like anymore, like to the end of that chorus thing. And then we sat on it for like a while. And I was like, okay, I want to finish the song for sure. I like has to see the light of day. And, you know, getting people in the room, you know, people are busy. And then when you're there, you're like, so we wrote each chunk and then like finished with the second verse that day and then wrote the outro again. But I think we had a day where we literally wrote nothing. And then the next day we wrote like the outro or whatever.
Right.
Because I wanted it to feel so good and different and me. And I feel like we got there. And I don't know, with Michael, who's you know, Michael Goldchain producer, he's just so talented. And so like, I was like, I want to make something like this. And, you know, with those guitars and stuff like that was just so lit to me. I was like, yeah. So that was cool. And then, yeah, it's just cool. Like finding like-minded people, especially when, you know, LA is so big. And so is Toronto, but Toronto's smaller. And so it's really cool when you're like with, obviously Nick Mate is like my best friend and also like very big collaborator for me. I think he's a genius. And so finding him and being like, oh, we feel the exact same about things. It's so exciting.
Yeah.
And, you know, we feel different about certain things, and that's what makes it so good. And we can kind of POV from two different angles. And, but yeah.
Yeah.
The first day, definitely when we wrote it, we were like, oh, this is so cool. You know, so different.
It's a weird thing right now in the industry. Well, it's not weird, but I mean, it feels like from the outside, it's been a thing maybe in the past decade, where it's like there's a lot of like a lot of collaborations going on, and like a lot of songwriters getting together and working on on one artist project. And maybe it's been a thing for decades, but it feels like songwriters have like, you know, songwriters have now been like empowered to take more space, so that we know that there's more songwriters on a song because we know those songwriters now. It feels like it's been like that anyway from the outside.
Yeah.
Can you speak to that in regards to like, you know, having so many songwriters in a room, and how important it is to pick the right collaborators, like you say in LA, there's so many people, how do you pick the right one kind of thing?
Totally. I mean, I think songwriting is cool because, and maybe this is why it's cool and maybe not cool at the same time, is like you find the people that you work well with.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, I feel like people can get locked into like kind of not a clique, but I don't think it's a bad thing. I think that if you work well with someone and you guys have the same vision or a similar vision, then that's awesome. You know what I mean? And I think that, you know, it can feel sometimes, I bet, like if you want to work with someone and then maybe you just don't vibe or whatever, like you can still be friends, obviously. But I think that there's sometimes this pressure of like, oh, I really want this session to go well because I really want to be friends with this person or whatever.
Right.
And I think at the end of the day, people are really nice from my experience. And I think that you, like, the goal is the song. You know what I mean? I think obviously with people that I'm friends with, sometimes the goal is just to hang out. And like, especially when you're in a lot of rooms, if you're with people that you align with, and you're like, let's just make like a joke song today. Let's make like a Gaga song today. I was with my good friend Zach Seekoff in a session, and we were like, and this guy Saul was, and their friend Daniel met me. Great guys, amazing guys. And like, feels like my high school friends, you know what I mean? Like that kind of energy of like, let's just make stuff. And we wrote like this, like Gaga, like Donatella, like dupe kind of song. And those things are just so important. And I think when you find people that you feel safe to like explore and just kind of do what you want to do within a room, it's really powerful. I think like, yeah, that can be like, I want to get in that room. How do I get in that room? If they're locked in. But I think I always try to look at the bright side of like, there's room for everyone. You know what I mean? And a lot of like your hard work and your talent and your perseverance and your kindness will really take you far in songwriting and being in rooms.
Yes.
Because it is such a social thing as well. It is a talent thing, and a hardworking thing. So yeah, it's cool. It's like kind of like this slow burn and slow pace building. But then it's like, if you're writing on a song that gets number one, you're like, you're going to be called left, right, and center. And that's kind of an exciting, you don't know when it's going to happen. Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting. You mentioned cliques and stuff. Cliques. Whatever.
Cliques.
Yeah. Whatever.
Whatever they call it these
whatever
days.
Whatever they call it. Do you think there's room for cliques? And do you think like, if you're doing a record, it should be like the same people?
I think that there's consistency in conception in that. Like, yeah. I think that it does make sense to me. especially if you find a groove where you're writing like four good songs with like the same group of people, you're like, cool, let's do an album. Right. But at the end of the day, it's the music is like, we're trying to write the best song ever. You know what I mean? So how are you going to do that? Is how you're going to do that. I don't think it should be like exclusion, but I think that like you're allowed to be like, oh, I like working with this person and I don't really love working with this other person, not because they're a bad person, just like you don't click, you know?
Yeah. Would the mentality ever change? Or have you ever been in rooms where the mentality is not necessarily like, let's not write the best song ever, let's write the best album ever? Like, has that ever happened? And like, would that be a complete like switch in mentality like for you if that was ever to be a thing?
I mean, yes, because I mean, even Charlotte's next album, like I was in a lot of the rooms and I wasn't in every single one of them that made them on the album. But, you know, the very first 2 days I was there, for example, and we set out with let's write the album and not let's write the song. So right. I think that was cool because there's like less of a pressure, but more of a pressure. And yeah, definitely. I think that there's different, like, you know, I always kind of come in the room and I think I do that less now, but before, if you're stuck in a room, you're like, cool, what do you need? Like that hasn't been checked off on the album yet. Do you need your big ballad? Do you need your, and not that there's right. like, there has to be that, but that can kind of help just like lead the session a little bit.
Yeah. And and maybe there's not necessarily much of a pressure on the song, but is there a pressure on the coherency of songs that are on the same record? Like, would you therefore, let's say if you're not in the first days of an album writing session, but maybe in the middle or last days of the songwriting session for the album, would you then be sent like all the songs that were written prior to and be like, hey, this is the vibe that we're going for?
I would say so. I think, or like not sent, but maybe you get in the room and they're like, cool, so here are our demos, here's the songs that are making it, you know, this is what we want to do. But I love a concept album, but not also all albums are, right? So
totally.
It's kind of, there's no rules, you just want to make good music kind of thing.
Fantastic. Just starting to wrap up the pod, I wanted to talk, wrap it up on the Socialite Rodeo. We want to talk about briefly, you know, a few of the songs, maybe ask you about, you know, what listeners can expect from it. If you want to talk about a few of them. What do you think? What can listeners expect from the EP that's coming out this Friday?
Oh my God, this Friday.
Yeah.
Period.
Period.
Oh, well, that's a great question. I feel like for me, so two, basically Shiny's not going to be on the EP. It's going to be like a standalone single. And then the track list, which I guess this is the exclusive, but I'm going to obviously post it on my Instagram, but it is She Kind of Looks Like Me and I've Always Had Things for Cowboys. So those two are already out, but then there's three other songs that aren't out, which are called Bull, which we played yesterday, Laurel Canyon, which is like the focus track, and then Too Soon to Have You. So it's really exciting. I feel like all these songs are consistent, but are like different in their own way. They were all made by different people. Which is really cool. I'm really excited. I think that they're just like me as songs. And so I'm happy about that. I think the writing is great. I think the production's great. And I'm excited that there's just going to be more songs in the world from Earth to Emily.
Yes. And correct me if I'm wrong here, but this is the first EP.
Technically my second EP.
Okay.
But the last one I made so long ago. So it does feel like a debut, but I think that I feel that way with every project. It's like, no, this is my debut, you know? but yeah, it definitely feels like my actual homecoming of releasing something that feels aligned with my aesthetic.
Yeah. Awesome. I just wanted to ask about, you know, just some tips, maybe some advice for some aspiring songwriters and artists, you know, listening to this podcast, what advice would you give them about, you know, breaking into the industry and staying true to their artistic vision?
And staying true to their artistic vision.
Yeah.
Great question. I think that it really is about, and I mean, I, you know, take my own advice all the time, but it's really about going inward and being like, what do I want? How do I feel?
Yeah.
And I think that no one, like, you want to be an artist ideally because you have so much to say, you know what I mean? And like, I think that the moment you kind of feel like at a loss of like what to say or what do you think is cool, then you know, don't grasp at other people or don't grasp at like panic of what I should do, but instead take a beat and go inward and like figure out what inspires you. And for me, like when I'm not feeling inspired, which, you know, hasn't happened recently, which is awesome. I think it, when it does, because it'll always happen again, is that, you know, it's like, okay, for me, I love watching live YouTube videos of live performances. Like I have my go-to performances that I'm watching of like my favorite artists. Yeah. And, you know, their VMA performances or their late night show performances. And I'm watching that and I'm like studying it and also just like intaking art in different ways. I feel like reading, watching movies is like a big one. Go to the movies by yourself. Because things, you know, like song lyrics for me, titles, like I've always had things for Cowboys, I'm pretty sure is a line from Sex and the City. Like,
right.
I think Stanford, is that his name? Said it, Carrie's like best gay friend. And he was like, well, I've always had things for Cowboys. And I was like, okay, cool. Like, that's a great thing. And that is allowed. You know what I mean? You can read a poetry book and find some type of sentence or word that inspires you and then go off of it. Because again, it all comes back, you know, it's cycling constantly. So, yeah, I think just go inward and be like, what do I think is cool? And if you don't know, like try to figure it out. And that can be as simple as just like knowing what you like to listen to. Okay. Well, why do you like to listen to it then? You know what I mean? What is making it cool for you? You know?
Yeah. Fantastic. Yeah. Want to conclude with the producer's game, which for those listeners, maybe it's your first time listening. We do a couple games on the podcast. One is the producer's game. Another is the Dream Fest game. Today is the producer's game. And basically, I give a chance to the guest to basically executive produce their dream album. I ask them about, you know, who the artist putting out this record would be, who the producers are on this record, who are the songwriters specifically for Emily and this week, who would be the band potentially. What studio it would be at, what city, as in you could bring Abbey Road to New York, for instance, what the decade and era would be. And I've also added this one, yes, both songwriters and what this album would be about for Earth to Emily this week.
Do you want me to answer all that?
So it's a loaded game for sure. We have a bit of time.
He said we're almost done. Now 50 more questions. Said yes, sir. Let me go.
But yeah, so, no, we could definitely take our time with this. You know, what, and this is dead or alive, not to make it more complicated.
I feel like I'm not good with names. No, I'm joking. Honestly, I know this is going to sound like crazy, but I feel like because I'm a manifestation queen, I'm like, I am so happy with my present day.
Ooh, yes.
That I'm like, obviously I want to be in bigger rooms and I want to write with like huge names, but I think like, I love my circle of people that I work with. And I think that I can make the best music ever kind of with them.
Yeah.
I think you kind of have to feel that way and figure out if you're not feeling that way, like go find people that you feel that way with.
Yes.
But I don't know. Like, I think for me, I'd love to just be like in a nice house. I don't think the woods. I think for me, like honestly, LA or New York or Paris or somewhere that feels exciting and romantic and like I'm the coolest girl ever there. You know what I mean?
Yes. Yeah.
Confident.
Yeah.
Yeah, or just kind of like being in Paris, like that would be so crazy, just like walking around and getting inspiration from the streets or whatever. But it songwrongwriters and
Yeah, let's talk
producers.
about songwriters and producers. Yeah, like are there some dream collaborators?
I mean, yeah, like I think there's it's different fonts for me, but like A.G. Cook, obviously, he
Yeah.
does the Charlie stuff, and I love that. I think like Ethan Gruska did Ryan Beatty's last album, who is like my all-time favorite artist. So that would be huge, but it's like so different. Ian Kirkpatrick, obviously. So many good ones. I also feel like I would love to do a room where I like have a huge name, but then also bring in like Nick Mette and like Zach Seacoff, and like, I mean, they're both going to be huge names for themselves anyways, but like I think that that would be so fun for me to have like my besties, but then also be like, okay, now we're gonna get write with these producers.
Yeah.
So yeah,
Fantastic.
that
And
would be kind of a dream.
are there I know a lot of your stuff isn't necessarily done with like a live band necessarily. But are there some musicians that you'd want for this like dream album, let's say?
Whoa. Michael Gordon is that his name? Miggy.
Yeah.
That'd be great. I want him playing those guitars and doing those analog stuff. Yeah, honestly, no. I mean, I love being in the box. I think it's
Yeah.
so funny. I think it's like being a jazz school, a person who has participated in live music a lot. I
Yeah.
think I've always just, such a computer kid since I was in high school making beats on Ableton when I was in grade like 10 and 11, like I started. So I think that for me, I just like always loved in the box stuff. And I think it's like low key, not an FU to music, but it's like an FU to,
The
I don't know,
traditional
just
sense of it.
being, yeah, traditional and being like, well, you can only do it if you have this. And I think like studio, when you think of studios back in the day, like being like live off the floor and like needing a lot of money to like record, and now you can just go like boop 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 on a software. I think that's funny. You know what I mean? So I think
Hilarious.
it's like, yeah, that's a vibe.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's part of being like also accessible. And if you're on the road making music, I think it's really cool.
Yeah. And again, for this dream album here that we're talking about, what would it be about? Are there some concepts that you haven't necessarily maybe talking about or written about that you would want to? Maybe it's, maybe
We'll have to find out, I guess.
not reveal everything, but are there some things like with these specific people that you would want to sort of, tread water a bit?
I mean, pop music is back, and I feel like so that I'll just say that. But
Yeah.
I think if I had these like crazy people in a room, I'd literally be like, you tell me what to do. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, obviously, I have such big ideas constantly, and I literally can't shut up, but like, I think that comes in with a nuance of like learning from people. And the only reason I feel like talented in my field is because I've had the opportunities to like learn from people and staying humble and, seeing what works for certain people and like applying it to yourself and seeing if that clicks. But yeah, pop music. I mean, I've always been like, I want to make pop music. I think when I was like depressed last year, I was like, okay, let's write some sad stuff. And I think a lot of people have probably, felt that in their own careers. But now I'm like, nope. I wanna be, dancing on stage. I wanna be,
Yeah, writing club classics.
back to back to back.
Yeah, correct.
Period. The Bible. Referencing the
Yeah.
Bible.
Well, that's how we conclude this episode, the 74th episode of the Cloud Machine Podcast, everybody. It's kind of crazy. Emily, I want to say, is anything that you want to plug before we end? Where can listeners find your music and keep up with your latest news and releases and everything like that?
Listen to my EP. It's called Socialite Rodeo, and it comes out July 5th. Pre-save link in bio. And you should listen to it. And my Instagram handles Earth to Emily, but there's no A in Earth because I could not afford the domain. That's like my bit. I mean, there's some girl who had it, so I'll probably DM her one day. And then the 2 is with the number 2. And that's the same across the socials. So.
Whoa.
Oh, I do yeah. Scottish. I do slide into Scottish, and I should have done the whole interview like that.
Well, thanks again for coming on. And people check out the EP Socialite Rodeo out July 5th, which is this Friday. And, thanks, Emily, again.
Bye, guys.
Today on the Cloud Machine podcast, we had the pleasure of having Earth to Emily on, talking about the intricacies of songwriting, of collaboration, of the music industry. You know, we learned a little bit more about how she got into it, about her creative process, about her upcoming EP, about her collaborations and how she does that versus how she writes on her own. We're super stoked to, see a Toronto girly, downtown Toronto girly, thriving in LA, and can't wait to listen to the complete EP out this Friday, July 5th. It's clear that her creativity and dedication to the craft of songwriting has left a significant mark not only on her listeners, her fans, but also the fans of and artists that she collaborates, the artists that she collaborates with, but also their fans. It doesn't look like she's stopping soon, folks. To our listeners, you can connect with Emily and stay updated on her latest projects by following her on Instagram at Earth to Emily. That's ERTH to Emily. And pre-save her new EP out this July 5th, this Friday, called Socialite Rodeo. We had the pleasure of playing it this past weekend at Pride Toronto, and it was great. There is still a song on there that I haven't listened to yet, but I'm super excited to listen to it this Friday. Also, for our listeners, don't forget to join our vibrant community of the 8s Network Discord. Whether you're a musician, industry professional, fan of music enthusiast, maybe you're someone that wants to just learn a little bit more about the music industry, or are somebody in the music industry looking for a lot more resources, please join us on the 8s Network Discord. It's a perfect place to connect with like-minded individuals, gain valuable insights and gain access to exclusive content. There's going to be a whole bunch of links in the description below, in the YouTube link below, in the YouTube description below as well. So please go check that out. There's also a pre-save link for Socialite Rodeo by Earth to Emily out this Friday, July 5th. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you next week. Stay safe. Bye.